Good morning. I'm Mark Barnes, and I practice law in both Washington, D.C. and Scottsdale, Arizona, and primarily I represent the firearms trade and individual gun owners before the Department of State and ATF, state and local agencies, and I also practice internationally, import and export control law. So my job is to try to make sure that you have access to firearms, ammunition, and other products that you're looking for as consumers, and to make sure that my clients are not the victims of overbearing, aggressive, and unfair government regulators. And I'm sure Larry and others will talk today about what's happening up on the Hill, and I could say a few things about that, but I thought I would spend a few minutes talking about a little bit about inside baseball, inside the Obama administration, the Department of Justice, and particularly ATF. One thing we can all, I think, agree on is that ATF has been an agency in turmoil now for several years, and certainly Fast and Furious significantly contributed to ATF's troubles. But as I said last year, there has not been a permanent director ever appointed and approved by the United States Senate. To some extent, ATF is really a victim of a lack of leadership. And no matter what you believe in this room, there will always be some degree of gun regulation. My job is to ensure that it is fairly carried out. I'm opposed to a lot of our laws that I think are badly drafted and unneeded, as we all are. But whatever law does exist, the rule of law should control, and the people who are carrying out the rule of law should be fair-minded. Now, we know that's not the case in some cases, but I am here to tell you that, and this may surprise some of you, many of the people that I have worked with in ATF are good citizens, good Americans, and they truly do believe in your rights, and they're disappearing, and you should be concerned about that, because many of them who did push back during the Clinton years and now during the Obama years, they're tired and they're retiring, and you should be concerned about that. One of the things, no matter who is elected president, and I pray that it is Mr. Romney, but no matter who is president, one of the things that we as a group will have to deal with is this lack of leadership at ATF, because ultimately, you don't make your own guns. There's an industry that makes the guns. And if that industry is threatened, our gun rights are threatened. The bottom line is we have to find a way to ensure that we have a professional ATF, an ATF that is well-led, an ATF that is fair. And as I told you, part of that ATF is disappearing, and it's extremely disturbing and troubling to me. Also, there's another trend, which is that after the Inspector General report came out on Fast and Furious, how many people here in the audience have even glanced at that report? Raise your hand. Right. Very, very troubling, obviously, and disturbing. Well, part of the response, and I'm getting this from some of the folks that I have regular communications with, is that they're considering decentralizing policy oversight at ATF to the local field division level. And I think that's a mistake. We had a reaction after the Waco tragedy where policymaking was more centralized in Washington and there was greater oversight over the special agents in charge at the field division level. And I think that that is necessary still. Returning a lot more local discretion to the field divisions, well, it depends on what field division you're in. If you're in a field division where they have a more accepting view of gun ownership and gun owners, maybe it's a good thing. But if you're in another field division, and I can name several, you're going to be in a lot more trouble without some degree of oversight being exercised. Clearly, there's a lot of work ahead of us in terms of how we monitor and watch ATF. And I just would urge everyone in this room to urge Congress to take a very hard look at the structure of ATF and how it's led, because for the long term, it has serious implications for us. Two other quick things I just want to mention at the federal level that should interest you. First of all, there has been a push to reform exports out of the United States of our firearms and ammunition products and moving control of sporting arms and ammunition from the Department of State to the Department of Commerce. A lot of people in my trade are interested in seeing that happen. It could be a good thing. On the other hand, as is the case with the Obama administration, there are catches. And I think one of the things that we have to be very, very careful about is that that move would not become one where it becomes so complex and burdensome to try to get goods out of the United States that, again, literally it jeopardizes the trade's ability to engage in its business. So while it's being billed as being a simplified, attractive way to proceed, I'm not so sure about that. And I think we need to keep a very cautious eye on that so-called reform, because it does impact, again, your ability to receive goods and ammunition. Now, I do want to talk about one thing that Alan asked me to raise, and that is some of you in the room have brought to the attention of the executive leadership of the committee that you're seeing UN numbers appear on cartons of ammunition. A lot of folks are buying large amounts of ammunition, and there's some concern that somehow this is something that is new and perhaps insidious. It is new, but I'm here to tell you it's not insidious. There is an international UN marking hazmat numbering system, and there has been for many years. The United States participates in that system. Many of you are familiar with the ORDM markings that appear on ammunition. Those are phased out as of this month, and the UN marking system is being used. It is not anything related to the arms trade treaty or any of the other UN anti-gun efforts. This is a system that's been in existence for many years to properly identify for carriers, marine carriers, cargo carriers, and others exactly what they're lading on their vessel or their aircraft for safety reasons. We in the U.S. decided to just move and adopt and make it easier for our international commerce and trade with other countries to adopt the UN system. So the UN code for small arms is UN0012, and that just means the same thing that you see next to it. 1.4S is small arms ammunition properly packaged. And that's all it means, folks. It doesn't mean anything more than that. And it is necessary for us to have those hazmat coatings in order to, again, get product to you, get product to dealers and distributors, export the product, and import product into the United States if we're bringing in foreign ammunition, which we do quite a bit of, and make the market very competitive. So from my standpoint, in summary, there are great challenges ahead in the regulatory environment as we move into 2013. And I would, again, urge all of you not just to think about the kinds of laws that we have and the fact that we need to dump many of them, but also who is administering those laws. And it's not just the political appointees that we need to be concerned about. Most of the work of an agency is carried out by career professionals. And when those career professionals who are good citizens like you get tired and disgusted and leave, then we have nobody looking out for us on the inside. And that is a bad thing.
If the ammunition is domestically manufactured, will the UN...
Hazmat marking still exists? Yes, we're using it domestically as well. So we're using the UN0012, and the 1.4S is the U.S. explosives classification for small arms ammunition. By the way, as you know, with that 1.4S marking, small arms ammunition, 50 caliber and under, is exempt from the Explosives Act, the Federal Explosives Act, so you don't have to worry about storage requirements. You don't have to worry about any other compliance issues. It's just automatically exempt.
We're gonna hold for questions until we have our question and answer session, because otherwise it breaks up the time for the speakers. But right now, even though the gentlemen up here all want to go last, we're going to go in alphabetical order. So guess whose turn it is next? Yes.
I'm happy to go. Good morning, Gun Lobby. I'm Jeff Knox. I'm the director of the Firearms Coalition, a little group that a lot of you are members of. It's great to see a lot of old friends and new friends. Bunch of overweight racist rednecks. I forget who we are sometimes. I have to look in the media to find out. This morning, I'd like to talk about just three things at the federal level. Elections, activism, and legislation. You at the local level, our grassroots, you are the gun lobby. The guys up here on the dais, we're your employees. We work for you. When the media is talking about the gun lobby, they're talking about you. They might not know it, but that's who they're talking about. And I want to encourage you to be sure that we are on target at all times. One of the important things about state and local level clubs and grassroots groups is that often they focus on state issues exclusively and don't get that involved in federal affairs. I would encourage you all, if you are a member of a local organization, a state organization, be sure that your organization has a federal affairs director, something of that nature. Be sure that that person has access to your email list and can send out alerts. If you're not loosely tied in with an organization like the Firearms Coalition that sends out alerts about federal legislation and issues, then please get with me, get on such a list, forward those critical emails, make sure that your members are actively responding. Things like the National Parks issue, the attempt at shotgun ban by the ATF. These were issues that came up that we had a heck of a time getting a lot of local organizations involved with because they, frankly, said they had other things to worry about. Be sure that you've got a liaison for the federal issues. It's really important. I want to touch on elections. It's important. More important than who is in the White House in the next 4 years is who is in the Senate. The Senate controls almost everything in Washington. It is absolutely critical that we get a majority gun rights, pro-gun Senate this year. If we don't, it doesn't matter who's in the White House. We won't get anything done and bad things will happen. We need to change the Senate. If you don't want to vote for Mr. Romney, there are reasons that some don't. You've got to go vote for the Senate. You've absolutely got to go vote for the Senate and work for that. Speaking of Mr. Romney, I really want to say I'm voting for him. I encourage you to vote for him. He has made mistakes in the past, and we need to acknowledge those mistakes. I think it's a huge mistake to pretend like he hasn't made mistakes in the past. He's talking the talk. It's up to us to make sure that he gets the chance to walk the walk and that we keep him in line. So, finally, legislation. We've got things that can happen in the next 4 years. National reciprocity is right up there on the edge. I would have liked to have seen that initiative moving a little bit later. There are some other things I would have liked to have seen happen first, like maybe our friends in Illinois get the opportunity to carry a gun sometime. But, yeah. We can't wait for Illinois. We need to move forward. I think national reciprocity is a real possibility. Some other things that you might not think about. silencers, as the ATF and the NFA refer to them, suppressors. There is no valid reason for silencers to be illegal, much less be considered machine guns, much less the washer that goes inside of a silencer to be considered a machine gun all by itself. Getting rid of the restrictions on silencers, I think, is a real possibility. There's some rationality going on in Washington, and I think that we can make it go away. I think that we can also potentially make the Gun-Free School Zones Act go away. And I think that we need to be moving forward on something that Wayne LaPierre promised us back in 1986, that repeal of the machine gun ban would be one of our top agendas. And, of course, there's Lautenberg. We want wife beaters to have guns. At least that's the way the press will describe it when we say that a misdemeanor does not cross the bar for justification of revocation of people's rights for the rest of their lives. There's a lot that I could keep going on. There's a lot going on in Washington. I just want to reiterate, get your local group active. If nothing else, just somebody who relays emails and alerts so that your people know what's happening at the national level and can help us wake them up in Washington. Visit my website, firearmscoalition.org. Read my columns on WorldNet Daily every Friday. And please get involved more. Get your people involved at the federal level. Thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm Larry Pratt with Gun Owners of America. And a good morning to you. There's already been some very good news take place at the federal level, and that is that old good friend Steve Stockman is coming back to Congress from outside the Houston area. Stockman is the guy who believes in starting the fight with the Republican leadership, because he's in the Republican caucus. So if you're going to get anything to move, you got to move it out of the Republican caucus.
Ignore him.
I'm supposed to ignore him. And what Stockman did in 95 was something I've never seen another Republican do. He had a bill in to overturn the Clinton gun ban. That was a good thing, especially since the Republicans had been elected on that basis the year before. He insisted that his bill be considered, brought up for a vote. We had a meeting in Dick Armey's office, who then was the majority leader of the Republicans, and Armey told us, you'll get a vote on this over my dead body. Well, Stockman happily kept Armey alive while getting the vote, because he convinced Gingrich, that great constitutionalist, that actually it would be in the Republicans' interest to have the vote, since that was why they were the majority. And so Gingrich said, yeah, Dick, you know, we got to have the vote right away. Otherwise, Gun Owners of America is going to mess us over in our districts if we delay. And so we did get the vote. Steve Stockman is coming back. And unless they redistrict him again, he's going to be there for 8 years. One of the objectives that we would have with a Steve Stockman, and hopefully some reinforcements to come along with him, is to get rid of the ATF. Shall not be infringed includes the ATF? I don't think so. You know, I'm glad there are people like John Dotson working there, but as was pointed out, they're of an age where they're starting to leave. And we got a lot of sociologists and other well-educated types coming into the ranks of that sort of police work, and that's not a good thing. Besides, it's an unconstitutional agency. It needs to go. We need to talk about that. That needs to be on the agenda. Senator Thune of South Dakota has a bill in the United States Senate which we're hoping might be attached to some sort of a spending measure later, even before the elections, and that would say that if you have a permit in, say, Virginia, where I live, then wherever you might travel, other than the People's Republic of Illinois, where they have no permit system at all, you would be able to carry, just observing whatever restrictions are the law in that state, kind of like driving from one state to another. The speed limits may change, but you don't need a new driver's license to go from one state to another. So we're very happy that Thune is pushing this, and that could well be something that we'll be talking about to those of you who get our email alerts. That could be coming soon to an inbox near you. Just this morning at breakfast, I was shown an article by Mike Vanderbo, to whom we owe so much of the information about Fast and Furious. Thank you, Mike. From Police Chief Magazine, linking firearms trace data with state fusion centers. How cool to have a vertical integration of all this data on us, and how important it is to know where a gun has been and all that. They don't use that information to solve crimes. They find a gun at the scene of a crime. The crime's already been committed. They don't prevent anything with this information. We've got to tell them, enough of this nanny state. Get rid of tracing altogether. Goodbye. We're shopping in Washington. Hopefully we're going to find a buyer to introduce a bill that will make it clear that the feds recognize what already is really the fact of life in so many states. The sheriff is the only elected cop in his county. Therefore, he is the top cop in his county. And whatever he says, federales to the contrary notwithstanding, that is what the law is. An example or two. One of our members is Brad Rogers, the sheriff of Elkhart County, Indiana. He was approached back in November by a farmer producing raw milk. Now, the Food and Drug Administration, neither food nor drug, by the way, I can find in the Constitution, had said that it was illegal for him to be selling that raw milk, and they were going to come and confiscate his equipment. And the sheriff said, well, let me come out and take a look. He went out to the guy's farm, and he couldn't find any reason why this would be a problem. The guy had been selling milk for years and years, and there were no complaints. So he got in touch with the FDA and told their attorney in Washington, you put a foot on his property and I'm arresting you. And she shot back and said, well, if you try that, we'll arrest you. And Sheriff Rogers, in so many words, responded, game on. Game on. Well, that was back in November and the game's still on. That raw milk is still being sold even across state lines. The idea. Can you imagine? Other sheriffs have dealt with BLM problems, with Forest Service problems, and they have made similar arguments that you guys don't have police authority in my county. In fact, if you're talking about police authority, I'm the one. Even the state troopers, even the county police, no matter what. And so they're increasingly telling the feds, you're not going to put up a berm to block access to the forest road, which when they do that means that you're likely to have fires that can't be contained. We're not going to let you block people from going in and take out dead wood, another reason that forest fires become so intense. Sheriffs are standing up and they're doing their job. They are interposing themselves between us and the federal authorities. And I think one of the most important things we can do as a Second Amendment community is make sure that we look to see what kind of guys and gals are running to be sheriff, make sure they get elected, because they are really our best defense against tyranny from Washington. So thanks for so much, folks. Good to see you.
Good morning. My name is Joe Waldron. I'm the former executive director of the Citizens Committee, now their legislative director. I called Alan when I got the schedule and said, why have you put me on this panel? You're setting me up against all the experts. Bottom line is, he said, well, get up there and do what you do best, you know, talk a little. He said, make some predictions. Okay, I think that most of us know that if President Obama is reelected, the results are pretty predictable. We can look at gun show restrictions. We can look at assault weapon and magazine bans. We can look at lock up your guns laws, multiple sales restriction. The list goes on and on. We've seen it all before. It comes back every year. The other thing is Mr. Obama has demonstrated a very, very disturbing tendency to ignore the Constitution. The way our Constitution set things up, we have checks and balances. Congress writes policy. They enact the laws. The president enforces those laws. We have a president who is making laws of his own or who is ignoring the laws passed by Congress. Whether it's gutting welfare reform, whether it's a mini DREAM Act, the selective enforcement of immigration laws, it seems that our constitutional law professor has kind of forgotten the Constitution. Under a Romney presidency, on the other hand, life is going to be rosy, right? I hate to get into the Republican bashing thing, except that let's recall that in 1989, it was a Republican president who enacted the first modern firearms ban, the ban on the import of so-called assault weapons. The Republicans have let us down in some other areas. We almost lost gun shows in 1999 after Columbine. It was only thanks to a handful of super hardcore Republicans who refused to move a gun show amendment, joined by a bunch of super hardcore anti-gun Democrats who didn't like the watered-down version of the amendment they were running. That was an alliance that worked to our benefit. The unholiest alliance in America today is nanny state Democrats and law and order Republicans. Lyndon Johnson several years ago said that one should examine laws not in the light of the good they will do if properly administered, but in the light of the harm they will do if improperly administered. RICO, look at how that's been abused, misapplied. Other laws that were used in no way, shape, or form in the way that they were intended by Congress. At least we don't think they were intended to be done that way. I'm not trying to Republican bash. I'm just trying to remind you that it's up to you. Jeff mentioned on it. Others have mentioned it. You're the gun lobby. Okay, we are your spokesman up there, but you're the gun lobby. It's the pressure that you put on legislators that influences them. Okay? You need to get close. The day after the election, you should be writing a congratulatory letter to your congressman, to your senators, if you have a senator up for election, to your state legislators. Let them know who you are. One, ask them to keep you informed about legislation affecting the gun issue. That's a responsibility they all have, constituent services. Let them know what your position is on the bills as they come up. When you send an email, when you call your legislator's office, and like I say, that's from Congress all the way on down, they should recognize your voice or say, oh, yeah, I know him, I know her. Tell them what your position is. Tell them why you are opposed to a bill or why you support the bill. Give them the ammunition, the information that they need to adopt your position. I'm a career intelligence officer. I'm accustomed to collecting information, analyzing it, determining the facts, laying the facts on the table, and let facts rule. Base your decisions on facts. Unfortunately, emotion tends to drive the gun issue. The Stockton, California schoolyard shooting, the shooting at Columbine. Those are the kind of things that get the media's attention, and of course the media's not on our side. They put pressure on Congress. They put pressure on state legislators. And they think that, oh, my God, we've got to do this because the people want it. Well, the people don't want it in most cases. Poll after poll after poll has shown that the public in general does not support more gun control. And in fact, it believes that most gun control laws should be relaxed. That needs to be conveyed to those elected officials. And, of course, the biggest vehicle you have to convey that comes on November 6th. That's what elections are all about. That's what the process is all about. That's what the system is all about. Barack Obama in 2008 only got 6% of the black vote in the United States. I say that because from 1964 on, 90% of the black vote has gone to whatever Democrat was running for president. Do the Democrats take the black vote for granted? You're darn right they do. Do the Republicans take the gun owners' vote for granted? Huh? I suspect that a lot of them do. you have to keep reminding them that, A, you're not to be taken for granted, B, you expect them to respond to your input. You're the constituent. I'm just a lobbyist. If there's a choice between talking to a constituent or talking to a lobbyist, they tell the lobbyist to wait out in the hall, wait out in the lobby, because constituents come first. But you have got to maintain as close contact with your legislators. They come home for a town hall meeting. They're home on recess or on vacation. Go to the town hall meeting. Introduce yourself. They'll remember you because you're a voter. It's like the importance of county sheriffs, Jeff mentioned. The reason that county sheriffs are important is because they respond to the will of the people. Police chiefs tend to respond to city hall, the city council, or the mayor. But sheriffs are the elected ones. Sheriffs are the ones who have to pay attention to the electorate to keep their job. And they're going to listen to you. Bottom line is, and the last message I'll leave with you, you are the gun lobby. Believe it. The strength of the gun lobby is not in the lobbyists. It's not in the money we donate to candidates. It's the grassroots. It's the millions and millions and millions of gun owners out there who are in a position to put pressure on the legislators to do the right thing. I don't care what color uniform they wear, Democrat, Republican. I don't care how their personal feelings are on the gun issue. Legislators vote against their personal feelings lots of times when they feel the heat. Be polite. Be courteous. Don't get nasty with them in a letter or in a conversation, but let them know firmly and politely what the proper position is on the issue, and then expect them to do the right thing. Thank you.